Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Much attention has been paid to the ongoing refugee crisis in southern Europe. Thousands of refugees from Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq continue to make their way across the Aegean Sea from Turkey to Greece, where refugee camps and conditions there have been under scrutiny by humanitarian organizations and European officials. But there's also been another wave of refugees that have received scant attention. Since the abortive coup in the summer of 2016 in Turkey, anywhere from 80 to 100,000 refugees from Turkey have left the country as refugees or exiles. Since that coup, 100,000 Turks have been arrested, 500,000 investigated, and over 150,000 employees have lost their jobs in a political purge. Teachers, professors, journalists, doctors, lawyers, and government workers. My guest today has been documenting their stories of these exiles. Vanya Womack is a director of the Center for Global Learning at Cabrini University in Pennsylvania, and she teaches in the School of Business, Arts, and Media. Throughout this past fall, she has made a number of trips to Greece and Germany, talking to the exiles about their story and about their life as exiles. She spoke last night in Tulsa at the Raindrop Turkish House about the story of these Turkish exiles in Greece and Germany, and she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Vanya Womack, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Turkey has been ground zero for a vast stream of refugees to pass through from Syria, from Afghanistan, and Iraq. Millions have moved through the country, and you know, thousands more are still housed there today in refugee camps. Many have moved across the Mediterranean to Europe, and especially to places like Greece. Mm-hmm. But you've been following a different set of refugees, or exiles, if you will, mm-hmm. and that is refugees from Turkey itself.
Right.
How big a group of refugees are leaving from Turkey itself, and why are they leaving?
Well, there's a huge number of people that have been purged from Turkey. And if you didn't agree with Erdogan's policies, or if you were associated in any way with the Gulen movement or with Fethullah Gulen, then you were at risk for being put in prison. And sometimes that meant along with your children, if you were a woman. And a lot of people had to go on the run in order to stay out of prison where, you know, we know there's a lot of torture and things like that happening. And so people then feel like their last, you know, ditch effort is to go across the Aegean Sea or across the river over into Greece.
Now, like the fellow refugees from Syria and Iraq and other places, are they taking the same modes of transportation? Are they leaving Turkey illegally, or are there a little more protections for the Turkish exiles themselves?
There's not protection for the Turkish exiles to leave.
Right.
There's a little bit more protection, I would say, once they arrive in Greece. You know, what's interesting about this is that these are people being expelled that are the intellectuals of Turkey, right? These are the doctors, the lawyers, the judges.
The bureaucrats within the government.
Yeah, the bureaucrats. It's the teachers. It's the professors, you know, like myself. And I think that's one thing that resonated very closely with me is that this could be me. You know, this is a situation where because of your beliefs, you're persecuted. And because you're persecuted, you have no choice either to remain and take the risk or to go ahead and leave.
The Gulen movement is huge in education. In fact, there's a huge number of charter schools here in the United States associated with the Gulen movement. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in Turkey, it was probably the largest set of schools.
Yeah.
So you had a huge number of teachers. And of course, the precipitating factor for this was the abortive coup in July 2016, in which President Erdogan, President of Turkey, blamed Gulen himself and his followers for the coup. Now, that's been hotly debated ever since.
Right.
But what followed in the immediate aftermath was this huge purge and thousands, tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 arrested in the immediate aftermath. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, the issue with kind of the Gulen movement actually goes all the way back to Gezi Park. And that was in 2013. So there was some purging that kind of started then, and then it started to escalate. And then definitely by 2016, we saw a big purge and push from Erdogan to imprison people or to push them out of the country.
It's interesting because when you go back even a little further in like 2012, right. I was just sort of refreshing my mind on the Gulen movement. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a 60 Minutes feature mm-hmm. on what they were doing here in the United States
and
in 2012. And people were trying to understand it. Officially, the goals of that movement is about education. It's about tolerance.
Uh-huh.
It's about learning about other religions. It's about learning
interfaith
and also about learning different languages and science and mathematics as a way of getting to the heart of Islam. Which, in one way, you could say that's very subversive to repressive regimes.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the same time, there are pronouncements from Gulen who has at some point or another said, you need to become a part of the government. You need to find the places of power. And, of course, that was very threatening to the government.
Right. That's the whole thing is that, it threatens his power. There were a lot of people that followed Gulen. And I look at this almost like people followed Martin Luther King or, as a Mennonite back in the 1800s, it was Menno Simons who was in Europe and how, the Mennonites were persecuted for their faith. And what did they end up doing? They ended up coming to the U.S. where they were, then given land and there was a network there of people to help them. So that's the same thing that's kind of happening now. I mean, I can look at the similarities within that. And, as they're leaving Turkey and they're coming into Greece, there's a good network of people that are there. And, these are, again, educated people, right? These are people that education is important to them. Interfaith is important to them. Community involvement is important to them. And I just found that whole aspect of it very, very fascinating.
And there's a weird situation with those followers because they're often branded as an Islamist mm-hmm. movement. But it is an Islamist movement of multiculturalism, mm-hmm. which is completely different what we think from an Islamist movement.
Right.
I mean, and it sort of, in many ways, it's going back to the founding version of the modern Turkey of Ataturk, which was a secular, Islam was on the fringe, not at the heart of Turkish politics and culture.
Right. And that's one of the I guess maybe not an argument, but that's one of the points that's out there. However, what I have found is a group of people that are being persecuted for not just, I would say, following someone that they see to be an incredible scholar or someone that they see as a leader, a good leader within their faith, right? But they're being persecuted just because of that. And when it comes down to like the coup and, 2016, and like I said, things were happening already before that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very strong argument that this had nothing to do with the Gulen movement, right? You can't put 14,000 people in jail overnight. you had to have a list of these people to know where to go and find them, right? So I see a group of people that are religious, yes. They have strong religious beliefs, but it's no different than, for example, like if I look at the American schools, right, the STEM schools, the charter schools that would be associated with Gulen. I went to a private school, a private Christian Mennonite school, and, twice a week we had chapel. I had people that went to school with me that were not Mennonite, that were not Christians. And they went, they went to chapel and we had different kinds of programs, that kind of thing. Speakers come in and talk. And in these schools, in the Gulen movement schools, they don't even have anything like that. So it's not like that they're, associated in a sense really with Islam. I mean, the practices of being a good person, being a good human being, understanding other people, realizing that people of other faith are humans too. And that we can all get along are really the top things that they teach in those schools. So as a parent myself of four kids, I don't know why anybody wouldn't want that.
So after the coup attempt in July 2016, mm-hmm. I think it was like 100,000 arrested, 500,000 people investigated, 150,000 employees of the government,
right.
ranging from government workers mm-hmm. to teachers to doctors and lawyers within the health and legal system, mm-hmm. Lost their jobs.
Yeah.
Were they encouraged to leave, or did they just say, there's no place for us, we can't stay here, and they decided to leave? And tell us a little bit about some of the stories you heard from Greece and Germany about their journey.
Yeah, sure. You know, based on my experience in talking with a number of different families and individuals, that when the coup happened, like if you were part of the government, you knew not to go back to your office. Right, you knew that that wasn't a place that you were going to go. Do you know
was
what I mean?
Was it the sense that they knew they were on a list and suspect?
Yes,
right, mm-hmm. because the government at that point was already making an
right.
enemies list.
Right,
if you
and
were.
These are names that are published in papers that list people. You have at this point in time now, you have neighbors turning against neighbors. I mean, it reminds me of what I've read about the 1930s. You know, in Germany,
right.
neighbors are turning against neighbors. You have family members turning people in.
Typical witch hunt
hysteria. And it's the manipulation of the masses of people. When you control the media like that, then you're only going to hear, you know, one specific message. But for example, some of the people that I met in Germany, they were part of the government. You know, they were part of very large corporations that were there. And they took different kinds of means in order to leave. But I think one thing to remember is that this happened in one day.
Yeah, you know? And the coup began in the evening, and by midnight it was thought to be crushed.
Right.
So, you know. And immediately people were arrested.
Right. And people knew that, people were getting arrested. They also knew that if they didn't leave their passports, if they weren't already, you know, not any good, that they soon would be. And so there were some people that were able to get over to Europe right away. There were some people that, here's a story of a family that I know. They went together with a couple other families. I mean, we're talking about, you know, prominent families and with prominent jobs in the government. They ended up buying a yacht, and they sent the women and children and a couple of the men on this yacht. And so they went as tourists, right? So mm-hmm. they put up different flags, that kind of thing, and they were able to take that yacht and get over to Greece. And imagine getting over to Greece and leaving everything there. I mean, and you've just, when the coup happened, you had people leave their homes. Like, they were able to grab just what they had. Their refrigerators were still on. You know, if they had pets, they were still there. If they were watering the yard, it was still on. And they had to leave, like, that quickly. So during that period of time, those were the first people that I would say, you know, were the ones that left right away. They had more knowledge about, you know, what Erdogan was going to do.
Now, were they welcomed in Greece
yes.
and later in Germany? They were.
Yes. And I have had many, many people that I've talked to, and I've done hundreds of interviews now, that have said, the Greek people are so kind to us. The Greek people are so nice. And, you know, originally Turkey and Greece were not friends.
No, that's
right?
true.
And it's questionable now with the
right.
news as to whether they're
right now, Greece and Turkey are at loggerheads over the other refugees, in which Greece is wanting to send them back. And, of course, mm-hmm. Greece is getting condemnation from the rest of the European community for the conditions in which those refugees, which are overflowing,
right.
are being held.
And that's a huge problem. I mean, Greece already is in economic turmoil, right?
You know? Prior to the refugee migration.
Right. Yeah. And so now, you know, they're taking in, you know, all of these refugees, and it's primarily in the camps that you really you hear the stories about the fires and about the overcrowding and things like that. But once they leave the camp and they're able to make their way to Athens, there's a network then that's able to accept them, to help them. There are still a lot of issues there, and trauma is One of the biggest things that that I found and that was brought to me to say we need help with trauma.
Trauma on the fear of just the whole fear of the situation of leaving, picking up and leaving in the middle of the night, making the journey across the Aegean and finding themselves in a strange land, having to learn a new language.
Right.
And in their case, they have probably a better support network than, say, people from the Middle East coming
Absolutely.
Over.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure they would. However, the Greeks are, I would say, I've heard stories that they are helping, like monetary-wise, more of the Afghanis and Syrian refugees than they do the Turkish refugees, because they don't see them necessarily as refugees, right? They're not fleeing war. They're not fleeing conflict. So that becomes a challenge. Because if you're coming into Greece and you don't have money, which I've met many teachers, you know, we're talking about preschool teachers, you know, that have been called a terrorist.
Yeah, middle class. Yeah.
Yeah. And they come and they don't have access to any of their funds.
And they've lost their job months ago.
They've lost their job, right. And some, and even, you know, part of this trauma too is that so many people end up having to go on the run. So they're going from house to relative if they can, friend to friend. Some of them are even going into what they call the forest, going into the, you know, the woods and having to try to survive. There's a family, I tell you a quick story. They made international news, so some people might remember this, but the end of September, there was a boat accident that happened in the Aegean Sea. And I met two of these families that were on that boat. One was a prominent lawyer, and he had he and his wife had decided to leave because he was a professor as well. And so here, you know, he's teaching students about the law. He's working with, you know, at one of the top universities. His wife is a medical doctor, got two children, and he's arrested. And when he's arrested and he goes to court, his court date, sitting in the court are his students and his fellow colleagues. And he said, you know what, that was probably one of the roughest things for me, is that I was teaching these people about the law and the law wasn't being followed. You know, and I was a prime example for it. So when that happened, then, you know, they both knew that they needed to leave, or they were facing prison time.
Is the refugee situation of Turkish exiles still continuing to
Absolutely,
this day?
Yes.
So, I mean, this is part of the flow
this
that's
is,
going
yep.
on today.
I mean, this is a family that just got to Greece. I mean, the end of September, you know, they left. Now, one of the things that I understand is that there is going to be a larger number of refugees coming from Turkey into Greece. I've heard numbers around 40,000, 50,000. So anytime, what they notice is anytime Erdogan is starting to lose power or perceives himself to lose power, you start to see an uptick in a lot of these arrests and prison sentences and things like that. So, you know, that's a really dangerous thing. It's cold. The weather is colder. Being on the sea is going to be a lot harder. You have a lot of women and children that leave by themselves.
Is the Turkish government sanctioning these emigrations, or are they people just getting up and leave?
No, people are getting up and leaving.
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah.
They're, it's not like a it's like no. an expulsion or anything
no,
like
no,
that.
No, no, no. They're. I mean, they. I think that they want them to leave.
Right.
Right. But they're doing everything they can in order to imprison them, set examples of. You know, you're against me. I mean, it's the making of a dictator.
My guest today is Vanya Womack. She's the director of the Center for Global Learning at Cabrini University in Pennsylvania. She also teaches in the School of Business, Arts, and Media. And she's been visiting Europe, as Germany and Greece, learning about the Turkish exiles in Greece and Germany who have left Turkey under the Erdogan regime. She was recently here in Tulsa speaking to a Turkish audience about that situation. Mm-hmm. You made, about four trips, I guess? To
Germany
yeah.
and Greece.
Yeah.
To Germany and Greece. And then I do some speaking. You know, I'm trying to tell the stories because there are so many people that want these stories to be heard. And, you know, they're refugees. They're unknown refugees. and they've got unknown stories. And in order to get any kind of knowledge across to people about what is happening to the intellectuals within Turkey and how they're being purged, we have to tell those stories and keep those stories alive. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Now, in the immediate aftermath of the coup in July of 2016, I imagine you saw a sympathetic audience in Greece for these Turkish exiles. Mm-hmm. Has that changed over the last 3 years, given the fact that so many people are coming through Greece? It's such a drain on resources. And are there differences between a Turkish refugee mm-hmm. and a Syrian, Afghani, or Iraqi refugee who has come through Turkey?
Mm-hmm. You know, I would still say the majority of what I hear is that the Greek people are welcoming to us. They're kind to us. They're nice to us. You know, they do what they can to help us. So I'm still hearing those stories.
But are they still going to refugee camps at the beginning,
yes.
generally?
Yes. So
on the various islands?
Yeah. So what happens is when they come in, their boat comes into an island, they have to give up their cell phones, they give up everything that they have. And the police are there, and then they're escorted to a holding center. So sometimes it's a jail, a local jail. Sometimes it's a warehouse. Where their paperwork then is processed.
Are they applying for asylum?
They're applying for asylum, right? And then after that, they are let go. And so then you have to figure out, where are you going to go?
So unlike, say, a Syrian or Afghani refugee who would be sent to a camp immediately, they're basically, okay, here you are. Welcome to Greece. Find your way. But we've taken everything you have.
Right, but some of them do go into the camps. Uh-huh. And there's been recently there have been some stories about pushbacks. I don't know if you've heard of that, but where there were some Turkish refugees. I actually met with a family that was, the dad was beat, mm-hmm. and then they were put back in the boat, and then they were pushed back over. They were able to get to an area where the Turkish soldiers were not, and they were able to get back. And when they were able to come back, they didn't have a problem.
So you're seeing this in isolated places?
This
where
is an isolated incident, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I know that there are organizations that are involved in these situations, that it's not just the Greek police that are involved. So
are you saying smugglers?
It could be smugglers. It could be people that are being paid by the Turkish government. It could be a number of different things. But that it seems to have settled down now since these other, organizations like the UN, et cetera, have been involved.
Now, for many of these families, Greece is a way stop towards someplace like Germany, where
right.
perhaps many of them have families. Is
right.
that a big a landing spot for many
it is.
Of these families?
Well, you know, there's a big Turkish community,
yes,
like
right,
in Germany,
right.
For example. In fact, when I was there, I remember like walking down the street and it was like I was in Istanbul when I was there. So, they see that as a place of comfort, even though they've never been there. I think one of the issues that's going to be happening more is that these countries are not going to be taking family reunification. So as they become more polarized,
it's a big issue in Germany where
they're
saying this is diluting our essential Germanness. And uh-huh. I mean, this is issues for all European
right,
countries.
Right.
Yeah.
And even
taking
when,
refugees.
You know, when they go to Germany, if they are able to get to Germany, they have to take certain levels of German language. They take a German culture class. You know, they do a number.
But yet
of
they're never
like
really
that.
Considered a German citizen, are they?
No.
Yeah. No,
no.
That's
mm-mm.
that goes mm-mm. with that.
Yeah. But they have the opportunity to get jobs, almost like back, in regards to what they were doing. I see that, or I've heard that a lot, too, of, these are professional people. And you've got people, for example, that was a tax importer, exporter, worked for the government, really good job. Now he's doing construction work under the table.
Because sure, that's the story of immigrants everywhere,
yeah,
though.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, or
yeah. You could be a doctor, and you could
or,
be driving a cab in New York. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. That's
well,
right.
Is there any sense that Turkey's experiencing this huge brain drain? Because these are the bureaucrats, these are the lawyers, the doctors,
right.
the teachers, the higher ed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's interesting. I spent some time in Libya back in 2012 after Gaddafi was down, working with the Transitional Council. And it's just a similar kind of story. In Benghazi, you had the intellectuals, right? So during the period of time when Gaddafi let people go out and study around the world, they came back and they kind of settled within Benghazi. And it was the intellectuals within Benghazi then that knew this isn't right, right? I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to follow, you know, this dictatorship kind of ruling. And so within, if you look at Turkey, like with that, you have this group of intellectuals that are saying, listen, what you're doing is wrong. We're not giving people all the information that's out there. You know, it's becoming a stronger dictatorship than it even was before. And just by disagreeing with that, then it puts them at risk. It puts their families at risk.
Well, it sounds like you've talked to a lot of families. What are your plans for all this research you've done and all these interviews?
Yeah, well, I recently wrote a chapter for a book. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a book to come out, which is more of a storytelling mode. Mm-hmm. You know, through the eyes of a refugee that has had to leave Turkey. But what I'm trying to do is be a voice for them. So, you know, whether I was in Germany or whether I was in Greece, I was meeting with all different kinds of people. I mean, people that came from prominent positions all the way down to a group of girls that were all under the age of 21, 14 of them, who had to leave by themselves. Leave their family, leave everything, walk through the Balkans.
Had they been politically active?
They were a teacher in a school. Oh. Or they were a dorm supervisor, like you have here, you know.
An RA.
That's what a resident assistant. Wow. Within a dorm. In fact, there's one story. This is kind of has a happy ending to it. One of the girls that I met in Athens was trying to leave. She was a dorm supervisor. When the coup happened, she automatically went into the dorms, and because the students weren't there, she grabbed everything that she could that would implicate anybody. So if she saw a book that had, you know, something about Gulen on it, she grabbed all of that stuff, threw it in her car, sped off, and dumped it. And then she went, you know, to her parents' house. And her mother was the only one that fought to have her stay. And then her father came to her and said, listen, if you're going to stay here, you're going to marry this guy. Hmm. And she said no. And she was being verbally, you know, assaulted by her own family. Hmm. You know, you're a terrorist. Here she was, a dorm supervisor. Hmm. Right. And so she ended up leaving and walking through the Balkans. She was able to meet somebody that was a guide to walk through. She had very little money. She gets over then into Greece. She gets to Athens, and she tries multiple times to leave. So that's another thing, is that, you know, they're stuck in a place where they can't get a job. The paperwork is so far behind. I mean, we're talking about more than a year, right, for you to even be able to start to do anything, that there's almost no option but to try to leave. Anyway, what she ended up doing is she ended up trying twice to get through the airport on a fake passport. Couldn't do it. She ended up on an island somewhere, completely changed her clothes so she looked like a tourist, took off her hijab, had her hair all done. She was able to go through, and she was able to get to her aunt in Europe. Mm. So you can look at that as a sad story. But as a story that also has an ending where she's going to be able, you know, to pick life back up again. And she was 20 years old.
It's heart-rendering. Yeah. Vanya Womack, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Vanya Womack is the director of the Center for Global Learning at Cabrini University in Pennsylvania. She spoke to the Raindrop Turkish House in Tulsa about the Turkish exiles in Greece and Germany. That's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.